I've been using the same dry cleaner for years. It charges an absolute ruddy fortune.
Mm.
I found another dry cleaner because basically, I needed some buttons stuck back on some trousers, and a shirt, and there was something else. What else has buttons on? Teddy bear's eyes. No, it wasn't teddy bear's eyes. They don't get off that. They don't get asked that very often. What was it? Oh, coat. Yeah, I had three. So over the last 7 years, I've made mental note. When I've got enough things to that need buttons put back on, I'll learn how to put buttons back on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's sort of micro tasks that sit around in your home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to sew this on that. I need to run that through
with a sword.
I need to run through him with a sword. I need to scrape that. I need to defungalize this. I need to acid bath them. You know those little mundane tasks which increasingly form the main content and meaning of one's life. Yeah, you know those ones.
Until all other meaning is lost. Yeah.
Until all other meaning is lost. Those ones. Hmm. So one of them was. Oh, yeah, buttons. Oh, another one, for example, I've had recently is, I must think of somewhere to put those batteries. So that's been...
Because I've been holding them for 3 years.
And they're starting to oxidise my hand. It's a complex process, don't fully understand it. Hands are now semi-transparent, and they also have an oily sheen.
Although one of the AAAs has fully recharged. Amazing, I don't quite know how I've done that.
Extraordinary.
It's supposed to be a disposable.
Where to put those batteries? That kind of thing. And these things, they almost sort of operate, they're sort of bubbling away, aren't they? At a certain level, occupying chunks of brain time, sort of almost permanently around the clock.
Getting in the way of that great novel.
Mm-hmm. Getting in the way of that bloody great novel, which I tell you what, if I could only have worked out where to put those batteries.
You could have written Battery Hand. Write what you know.
Battery Hand. They're calling it the new Game of Thrones. Battery Hand. Except for instead of a complicated series of family and political intrigues set in a medieval parallel realm, it's the story of a man with quite a hot wrist.
Starring Sean Bean.
The terrible decision to put those batteries in his dominant hand. That was the one mistake he made.
And remember, the hand that carries the batteries is the hand that eventually gets tired. There'll be lines like that, won't there, that really resonate with people.
Hmm.
Similar soundtrack, not the same as the Game of Thrones, but similar. Go like that.
Everything in this kingdom is battery operated.
Welcome to Batarania.
I am the Duracell Bunny, the king of this kingdom. Just don't do anything for more than about 20 minutes because nothing really keeps going much longer than that.
But they say a child will come with rechargeable battery system that you plug in and it recharges and that will change everything, but it sort of doesn't really work. And didn't.
I say unto thee, plug into what?
Oh, have you seen episode 4, slowly runs down wedding? Where everyone's about to get married. It's terrible. Everyone's about to get married.
And that's when they begin the quest. The fellowship begins the quest for the socket, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And is the socket actually real? Mm. Don't know. Maybe it's the journey for the socket. For in a way, we are all batteries.
It's rumoured to be guarded by a small plastic cover that's quite snug and quite difficult to get off without a knife. And then you sort of slice a chunk out of your finger and a bit out of the wall at the same time.
And then ultimately you're sticking a knife in a socket, which is... Bad news.
Which is how it ends. Well, I don't want to, no spoilers, but yeah. No spoilers.
So it's the buttons, right? So I was going to get these buttons. So I thought, you know what? In fact, I was standing there and I was thinking to myself, you know what? Maybe I will learn how to do the buttons. But then I thought, I just can't be asked to learn how to sew in the buttons. Mm. Even though I bought a sewing kit for that very purpose between between 3 and 4 years ago.
Did you know that in a hotel, a sewing kit is one of the things you can just ask for?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that like a sort of universal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that kind of thing.
Like as a legal obligation.
Mini kettle.
Yeah.
Bible.
Duo bourbons pack.
Mm-hmm.
Shortbreads.
Small iron that emits sort of guff of shit smear across any iron that you want to press. For example, 20 minutes before you have to leave, you do a show. That kind of thing.
A kettle o' piss.
Kettle o' piss.
Oh, the old kettle o' piss. It's such a great tradition. You know you've got a kettle o' piss. You know it's been a kettle o' piss many, many times for many a long, long year.
Was that because a hungover businessman has pissed into the kettle because he can't make it to the bathroom or he's too much of a hurry?
It's just part of a long tradition.
It's 1984. I'm a busy businessman. I haven't got time for this. I'm going to have to piss in the kettle, boil my own hot piss, pour that on the bourbons, mash it up, smoke 2 cigarettes, and head to my morning meeting with the Soda Stream guys. Is that what that's from?
Yes.
That's where it started, yeah.
Yeah.
It's also so you know that Mike is currently on tour. He's been staying in hotels across the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know Mike's been staying there. When you go in to clean the room, and the kettle of piss is boiling hot.
Well, he likes to leave it on a roiling boil. Is that right? Roiling.
I tape down the button so it keeps boiling.
You've disabled things. It keeps going.
Leaves it roiling. Yeah. Boiling and roiling at the same time.
Can I just say, guys, to the listener, welcome back to a new series of Three Bean Salad.
Yeah.
The show where me, Ben Partridge, Henry Packer and Mike Wozniak talk about a topic sent in by the listener.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Well, maybe it is... Maybe it's time to shuffle along in that direction, do you think?
Fire up the old bee machine.
I was going to ask you both how your month off was.
I tell you what, it has felt like a long time.
It has.
Was it 4 weeks or was it a five? It wasn't a five. Was it February? That's not even a four. It's barely a four.
It's like the smallest month. Yeah.
It's the most rough. Yeah. It's just a leftover month, isn't it? It's not a proper month. It's just a collection of offcuts from other months, isn't it?
You had your birthday.
That's true. I did have my birthday. Went for a nice meal.
Mm. Costa.
It's the one day in the year I don't go to Costa. Because I'm already in Costa. I spend the whole day in Costa, so I don't go to it. So I'm actually in it. So I sneak
into
Costa.
They let you wake up there, don't they?
Yeah. They let me wake up there. It's a special meal. But it's the one day that I don't go to Costa. So, I'm in Costa. And I leave Costa the day after my birthday. So it's a fully Costa-ized experience. I breakfast on the sausage bun. And a packet of crisps. I then have my first
American and the good birthday. Wishes of the staff on your birthday.
No. No, we're way past that, man. Way past that.
They might issue you with a writ of some sort, perhaps.
Yep, that has happened. You know something I learned recently. Right? I went to another cafe chain recently. I don't know if I can. Okay, but let's say, I'm not going to say which cafe chain it was, but it certainly might have been twiddling its thumbs when Roan burned. Fiddling. Not twiddling. They're fiddling. Fiddling. Hello?
Nero.
That's right. It's not twiddling its thumbs, it's fiddling, as in playing the fiddle. Anyway, there's a Nero that I know, and it is the most godforsaken fucking... It's an absolute wreck of a place. I mean...
You can still smoke in Nero's, can't you?
Do you know you can still do fox hunting in a cafe ratazza?
That's right, and the death penalty is still very much live and kicking in the pumpkin cafe.
They've got their own jurisdictions, these places.
That's right. But in this cafe Nero, they said to me that I said to them, like, what's going on, like, because
this place is so shit. What's going on?
Basically, as politely as I could, I asked them that. There's like a huge stain on the ceiling.
Wow.
That was just growing. And a smell that occasionally...
Suggesting a seeping body has been kept directly above it.
I think possibly a seeping body. But so I used to work in the basement area. So occasionally there'd be like an intermittent smell. Then it became more and more regular. Then it was mainly the smell you'd notice. Oh, okay. Oh, there's no smell. You'd notice it when there wasn't a smell. And there was a stain and the toilet sort of, it looked like, it felt like you were in a deep sea wreck. It felt like you were in a toilet. Yeah. On a sort of, in the wreckage of a ferry.
Stricken skeletons.
The stricken skeleton
grasping onto a doubloon.
Doubloon in one hand, cutlass in the other.
Yeah. Yes, it very much had that vibe. But basically, one of the staff members explained to me, I've noticed this in other cafes now, where, for example, the lock didn't work on the loo, and it wasn't fixed. It wasn't fixed in weeks and months, and then the internet will stop working, and it'll be weeks and months, and it'll never get fixed. And eventually, I asked this guy working there what was going on, and he said that basically, the franchise will sometimes essentially cut off all funding to a branch and just let it go. And it becomes a ghost Nero. And it is like you're on a ghost ship. It's just floating free. It's not being given any sustenance, and they're letting it run down.
A Ronin Nero.
A rudderless Ronin Nero that is just wild. And out there, but it's deteriorating.
Did you ever think about what it says about you that you were choosing to go to, of all the cafes in London, you chose to go to the Nero with no funding that had been cut off from
HQ? He did
HQ.
Say to me, and if you could just stop coming, they will finally close it down. Well, no, because also, that's the trade-off with me, which is then it was therefore a very quiet Nero. So on the one hand, it was good for me because it was quiet.
And you felt there was a vacuum of leadership that you thought you could fill.
That I could fill. Maybe I could captain this Nero. I'm going to the toilet to grab myself a cutlass.
Time for the first time in this series to turn on the beam machine. Okay, thank you to everyone who sent in their suggestions for topics for the Bean Machine. If you'd like to do that, send it 123beansaladpod@gmail.com. And Michael did that very thing. Michael from Bremen.
Thank you, Michael.
Sent in Zeppelins.
Ooh.
Do you still get Zeppelins?
Ooh. And is there a difference between a Zeppelin and a blimp?
So I think blimp, there's nobody travelling in a blimp. It's just
there. That's key.
So you
is
put,
it?
You put the word on the side, you know, Michelin or whatever it is they put on the side.
Goodyear.
Oh, Goodyear blimp. That's right. Sorry.
That's it. I don't know. I can't remember the last time I've seen an airship, a Zeppelin, you know, with passengers.
Weren't they
on the way to Zurich?
Weren't they just like a one-off idea that happened during the crazy days of World War II or something? As a way of
pre-war. I think.
Was it pre-war?
Let's have a look.
Pre-World War II?
Yeah.
When was the Hindenburg?
Here we go. So yeah, here we go. 37 in New Jersey.
Oh, so it wasn't German.
New Jersey.
It's been German. Jersey.
Manchester, New Jersey.
I'm so sure it was like a Mittel Europa.
That's what I thought.
Job.
Hindenburg.
I think this bodes badly for this episode. When we start Googling stuff, it tends to be bad radio.
That's true.
Speaking of bad radio, there's an episode we never released called Covered Markets that we have mentioned before. I'm going to put it out. I found it.
On the Patreon?
Did you listen to it?
For the Sean Beaners or for everybody?
It would be just Sean Bean Patrons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Did you listen to it?
I have listened to it. It's fine. It's not as bad as...
It's the very first one.
It's not as bad as we thought
it was. I had a feeling it might be fine.
Yeah.
I think we had higher standards at the beginning. I think you know, in the beginning we didn't say things like, it's fine, did we? We were like, it's exceptional. Or it's in the bin.
I think
that was how
right.
Mike started our first meeting, saying that. Do you remember?
Only the best will do.
And the bin is itself exceptional as a bin.
So it's bad radio. So no, let's not. We won't Google it, will we? We won't Google the Hindenburg.
Probably best. Yeah, I think Ben's probably right.
So I mean, just from memory, it's a German. It was German. It was a commercial passenger carrying airship, I think, wasn't it?
Interesting.
I believe it was rigid, wasn't it? Yeah.
In some places, too, I think, yeah.
Certainly in places, isn't it? Too rigid, some might say. In terms of, was it the longest class of flying machine of its type? I would say it was, certainly by envelope volume. I mean, that's the only way. If we're not talking envelope volume, then all bets are off. You know, like, I can't say, but
that's the unit you're comfortable with, isn't it?
It's envelope volume.
Hmm.
I assume that was measured in the same way it is now, which is you have a large stencil with different envelope shapes and you pass it through, don't you, to see which...
Yeah, see if it's a large letter or a...
A large letter or a Zeppelin. Yeah, large letter, small package or Zeppelin. Obviously, the Zeppelin is going to cost you a lot more.
You're going to have to bloody queue as well, because you're not going to put that straight through the box. You're going to have to check in with one of the people behind the counter.
We probably suggest you do insure it and you... You're going to want to go signed for, aren't you? I'd say. Who do you reckon it was named after? Hindenburg.
Probably Paul Hindenburg.
Yeah, Paul. I assume you mean Field Marshal Paul von Hindenburg, don't you? Yeah. Sorry, obviously Paul Hindenburg. Oh, I could never think of 1934 without thinking of his death.
They sort of fall into a similar category to me as hovercrafts, which are machines that were invented and people must have thought, we've absolutely cracked this.
Because it's not on the sea, but it's on the sea.
And you don't really see them very much. I have been on... Have you ever been on a hovercraft?
Quite a few times. They used to be a regular feature of life, because near where I grew up, there was a... What was it, HMS Daedalus? There was a kind of base where there was a bunch of hovercrafts, and you could get a hovercraft to the Isle of Wight, for example. If you really wanted to get to the Isle of Wight in a hurry, you might get a hovercraft.
And if you didn't want to drink a very, very hot coffee on the way.
No, they would skim. That was the thing. Yeah. That was the exciting bit about the ride, is they'd get really fast and they would bounce off. Yeah. You would be airborne, periodically airborne.
I remember
getting it and thinking... Imagining before I got on that it was going to be, you're kind of floating on air, right? So it's going to be this wonderfully...
Exactly. Hover, smooth.
Yeah, for about 3 seconds and then...
And it turns out the absolute opposite. Yeah, it's very noisy and incredibly bouncy.
And you're banging, you're like, I never thought of water as hard. It's incredibly hard.
No one is leaving the toilets on that hovercraft other than utterly shamefaced.
Yeah.
It's almost worth sitting outside the exit of the toilet seat.
You are the kettle o' piss, basically.
The only toilets,
every toilet visit is an utter catastrophe if it happens on the hovercraft.
Well, they need toilets which have to have doors on the top as well as on the front.
Okay, here we go. Pinball piss, here we go. I can do it.
I've got my helmet on. got my elbow pads. Let's do this. Yeah, because it was a lot of up and down, a lot of crunching of jaw. Yeah. The other thing which I thought was disappointing about the hovercraft when I used it is that the whole point of a hovercraft is it's amphibious, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah? It's a mechanized frog, yeah? Isn't it? You've got all the benefits of a frog.
Yeah.
And none of the downsides of a frog.
You're very unlikely to be nabbed by a golden eagle at any point.
Exactly. A Frenchman's not going to try and lop off your legs. Stick them in a salty stew. Is that okay to say? Is that okay? And also, the benefits of a frog, for example.
Quite nice in a salty stew.
And of course, if you've ever seen hovercrafts reproducing, it's an absolutely...
Hovercraft spawn is amazing.
Hovercraft spawn is exceptional, isn't it?
Yeah, it used to really clog up the Solent, I seem to remember.
That's right. And of course, some of you will think you've seen what you would commonly refer to as a buoy. a floating buoy.
It's a tadpole.
Actually,
buoy.
If you see what you think is a floating boy, that's in fact that is a spare piece, bit of hovercraft spawn, isn't it? It's just floating around on the high seas.
It's just waiting to be sort of spunked on by another hovercraft.
That's right, just on by a hovercraft. So yeah, it's frog technology. But okay, what are the great things about frogs? Their main bonus, their main, which makes them, you know,
so feared.
Is their knife work.
which is why they're so feared and respected of ducks, of geese, of various fowl, of otters, and of so many of the pond folk, isn't it? It's no, because they can go in the water and the land. No, yes. One else can do that. Mm. They can go on the water and the land. They're amphibious. Whereas the hovercraft, yeah, all right, we've got to Dover. Now take me home, you're a hovercraft. What's the fucking point? You might as well have been on a boat. You never see them going up and down the street, the high
street. Keep going.
Keep going. That's the whole point. You're not using half of this technology. This would be like a frog who's never left the pond. It would be by any other name, a trout. Sorry, carry on. Sorry, Ben.
Why wasn't there one that went to central London?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Exactly. Mm. It's a hovercraft. It's amphibious.
There should be a hovercraft corridor up from the south coast.
Yeah. Of people banging up and down, like dentures flying and specs smashing and just but getting you...
All covered in piss.
Covered in piss and blood, but getting you all the way home.
Yeah, good point.
But no, you're right. Hovercraft isn't that category of technology where when they nailed it...
Oh, they must have thought.
They must have thought, this is holy. Don't tell anyone. Let's just enjoy this moment before we tell everyone. Just think.
We can open the first direct Lille to Leicester route. It's never been done before.
We can do it. The two L's. We can join the two great L's.
Also, I think, I might be wrong, I think they're like a British thing, right?
Really?
I think they're invented by a Brit. Am I wrong?
I don't know. It feels like a very British thing to say.
Yes.
It feels like you're the product of British schooling. That feels like that's the sort of thing that we're sort of trained to assume at any point.
Yes, you're right.
We found it rather than we just nicked it off someone somewhere.
Yeah. Oh no, I've gone on Google and in 1915 the Austrian Dagobert Müller von Thomamühl.
How could you have forgotten Dagger von Gilbert von Schnömerfeld? What's he called?
Dagobert Müller von Thomamühl. Oh. Built the world's built the world's first air cushion boat, Luftkiss Engleiboot.
And he just launched Müller yogurts on the side. Then that wasn't even his main thing.
That's what funded it. But then presumably, then Peregrine hovercraft before matriculating it at Cambridge heard about the idea, nabbed it, brought it home.
The idea of the modern hovercraft is most often associated with Christopher Cockerill, a British mechanical engineer. There you go.
Who went over and just
nicked
douched von Dilbert on the head.
Yeah.
Hang on. Cockerill came across the key concept in his design when studying the ring of airflow when high-pressure air was blown into the annular area between two concentric tin cans, open brackets, one coffee and another cat food, close brackets, and a hairdryer.
Sorry, I didn't understand literally any of that.
I don't think it does make sense. That's intentional, you see. That's to disguise his plagiarism.
He fired a hairdryer at some cat food.
Yeah. It's clearly a bullshit. He's up in front of the patent committee saying, well, we've got this Austrian guy who says he invented it. He's like, no. Well, all right. Well, how did you come up with it then? I did. Well, heck, no, really. I had a hairdryer. Yeah. Yeah. What were you doing with it? I had it like it was a cat. Food, eat what? Tin. There was a tin and there was another tin. Bullshit, Cockerill. Get out.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
It sounded like there was a robot's anus involved there. You said were there robots?
I didn't use the phrase robot's anus.
No, but that's a very interesting piece of word association, isn't it, Henry? That's where you went.
But you said the annular hole between two tin cans.
Robot digestive tract talk.
You said the annular hole between two tin cans, did you?
I did say something like that. I said high pressure air was blown into the annular area between two concentric tin cans.
And so that's is that a description of how the first hovercraft was invented, is it?
Well, according to Christopher Cockerill, yes.
Oh, that's Christopher. Oh, We can't take it from Cockerell, can we?
No, we want, we've got to take it from Dagobert.
Yeah.
You know what I reckon happened? Cockerell went to visit him in a Viennese tea room.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And said, what's he called? Hello, Dagobert.
Yeah.
Dagobert Müller von Tommermühl.
Dagobert.
On a sort of false pretext. He's just saying he wants him to sign one of his yogurts.
I want you to sign one. Can I have a signed yogurt, please?
It's my mother's birthday.
Dagobert, can we sit in the corner?
And he said, Dagobert, can you please sign one of your famous yogurts? I've invented a fountain pen which writes in strawberry compote.
You're saying that Christopher Cockerell invented the Müller corner?
He certainly claimed to, yes.
And then Müller stole it off him, and then to get him back, he stole the hovercraft off him by saying that he'd blown a hairdryer into a robot's anus.
Look.
And then everyone said, no one's invented robots yet, so he had to say, all right, it was a tin of cat food.
Yeah. I'm just asking the questions, Ben. I reckon what he would have done, though, is, if from the era, is he'd have said to Dagobert, before we start this meeting, please, would you like to have a quick look into this fascinating box of curiosity? This box of curiosities. This box of curiosities. And Dagobert were thinking, why is he saying box of curiosities over and over again? And while he was asking himself that question, he snaps his... Well, no, that's what happens. He snaps the box and suddenly Digbert's trapped in. He's like, oh no, I am now one of the curiosities.
Snap the lid of the box. He is the curiosities, it turns out. Is that the twist?
Forever, trapped inside the box of curiosities.
Right.
And Dr. Cockerell goes back to the UK. And
I don't think he's a doctor.
He's a real Cockerell, though. He's a real bloody Cockerell. Tell you that much. Have either of you ever been up in a hot air balloon?
No.
I think I became very troubled by it on the day that I realised that there's no piloting going on, really, is there?
Is there not?
Like you're completely at the mercy of the wind, like where you end up.
Is it like plastic bag in the breeze?
Yeah.
That's the level of...
You don't know where you're going.
Control. Maybe that's why they didn't...
You've got to very much rely on the will of someone possibly following you or picking you up where you land, wherever that is, however many hours later.
I also think the experience of doing a hot air balloon ride in Britain is someone buys it for you as a present.
Mm-hmm.
Red letter day thing.
Yeah.
You call up, you say, have you got any, I can do this week. They say, sorry, that I booked up.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do next half term? No, sorry, I booked up. So you find a day you can do, you take a day off work.
Mm-hmm.
You get up at 4 a.m., you drive to Gloucestershire,
mm-hmm.
You get to the field. There, weird little bloke goes, oh, sorry, the weather forecast's not very good today. You'd have to go back home. You drive home, you ring up HQ again.
There was no sign of a hot air balloon anywhere in that field or anywhere near it.
No.
Or even of a storage facility that could house it.
You ring up again, you come up with another date, you take a day off work, you get up at 4 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
You drive to Gloucestershire, you arrive, the same little Rumpelstiltskin guy's there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, love it.
Yeah, he's got a new gold tooth. Hasn't it?
There's not enough wind today. There's too much cloud cover. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to go home.
I know. I know what you're saying.
I don't think it actually happens. I think it's largely a scam.
And the ones we occasionally see in the sky, what are they? Are they? They're just projections in some way.
Chromatic aberrations, they're called.
Okay.
And it's what happens when, if someone's projecting an avatar of an ABBA member on the ground.
Yeah.
There'll be a sort of refraction then up into the sky.
Okay.
That's right.
In an area of high pressure. Right.
Exactly. So that's why if you look at them as hot air balloons through binoculars, you'll see a lot of them, they'll have a little beard because it'll be Benny.
It's normally Benny. Yeah.
It's normally Benny. It's generally Benny. Or one of the members with an easier to remember name than the other, it tends to be. But yeah, it's true. No, I know what you're saying, Ben. It's the kind of thing which it'll just become a sort of like a sort of albatross around your neck, won't it? Be like, yeah. I've got to go and do this study. Also, I think a lot of the time what happens is if you do manage to get on it, you go up. So the guy he's been talking to every time, obviously every time you go and he says, sorry, can't do it today, he's got like a gold tooth or slightly nicer trainers. It's all working well for him, isn't it? If you do find, he does finally let you go up and you get to a nice height and you think, oh, this is nice. You're looking at the view, you're looking down. you look down, and you'll look down and he'll be shagging someone you love, won't he?
And stealing your car at the same time.
Yeah. And it occurs to you like, that not only that, but he probably should have come with you in the basket.
he probably should have done. You thought, I should have mentioned it, but I thought it was so awkward. You look down, all you can see is he's got quite a very, very white, pasty buttock and it'll be someone you love in that field. But how's he managed to get my...
He has written the instructions for how to operate the basket on his buttocks, but they're becoming increasingly difficult to read.
Increasingly difficult.
You just left a telescope in the basket.
But you keep needing to look at them. You have to look at them. You need that information, which is taking you right where you don't want to go, which is to your favourite aunt or whoever it is, or it could be an uncle, a brother, just someone you love. And you'd be like, has he coordinated with them? How have they?
Because my aunt did buy me this experience.
What kind of a point was my aunt?
This is all on Auntie Tabitha's coin. What's going on? Who's pulling the strings here?
It should be me pulling the strings. Hang on a minute. Oh, I'm going in the wrong direction. It's quite good. And also, it's the only hot air balloons, isn't it? It's the only technology which... where you're transported in a full, replete Fortnum & Mason's hamper, isn't it? Full of chutneys, cheeses. And obviously those are the things which you then throw out if you're getting too low.
Your ballast cheeses.
You got your ballast cheeses, your ballast chutneys.
Well, no, that's not the case. That's not the case at all, Henry.
Is that not right, Ben?
No, there's no cheeses, hams, chutneys, anything in there. That's what happens when you land, is you turn into that.
The impact.
So, your pâtés. That's where the Masons get their pâté from.
Exactly. On impact, you're pâtéed. A lot of your internal fluids turn into chutneys, which are then jarred.
Well, obviously the bone jellies with that level of impact also.
So flavoursome. So
conserve. Bam. Yeah. Preserve. Preserves, conserves. Yeah, you've got
bam, pork pie with an egg through the middle.
Well, once there was your bonce.
Yeah. Whammo, jar of Victorian toffees. Isn't it? All the bits of you just...
Yeah, mega compressed spine. Yeah.
So you become that hamper.
Yeah.
The other downside of the hot air balloon ride is you have to, by law, I think, propose to whoever you're with.
Oh. That's right.
And that can you know, depending on who you're with, that can be a real problem.
Again, one of the reasons it hasn't caught on as a way of getting around... Along with the fact that you can't control where you're going. You have to watch a close family member or beloved one being shagged. And, of course, the hamperization of your...
internal organs.
Your body. Yeah, but the fact that you have to propose. Don't you? So if... And sometimes if that's just like a random Dutch tourist, it's quite awkward, isn't it? Because if you do survive the hamperization, you then have to live out...
Well, a long and loveless marriage, yeah. You're right.
A long and loveless marriage with a perfectly nice Dutch person.
Might get an EU passport out of it, though, down the line.
Well, you're talking about when you're semi-hampered.
Yeah.
Bits of you'll be chucked.
Yeah, if you've landed in a bog, or a bit of a softer landing, you know.
That's right.
But even if you do get that EU passport, Mike, you can't sell your pâté into the single market from Britain. That has to stay in Britain.
Oh, you're down to zero in terms of assets. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you may be chutney from the shoulders up, for example.
Yeah, that's true. You might not even be able to import your remaining self onto the European mainland.
Yes, that becomes... Because you're transporting foodstuffs.
Mm. Yeah.
Can you claim that you are bringing your own head on the journey in order to eat it en route? That's the kind of area we're getting into, isn't it? Which is why it's always worth taking a packet of Ritz cheese biscuits or any sort of cracker with you on a hot air balloon journey, isn't it? So that you can then claim later on that you were, if you're semi-chutnerized.
Yeah. Well, that's what British businesses are currently having to do, aren't they? They've got lorry drivers having to, I mean, sometimes they'll be sat down in Calais and they'll have to literally sit there while the border patrols watch them eat a dishwasher because they have to pretend that all of the dishwashers in the back of the lorry
were to eat en route.
Were to a snack for tough times.
So that's Zeppelins.
That is Zeppelins, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Really great stuff.
Okay, time to read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks. to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
Let's start off with one from Josh.
Okay.
Josh says, hello, Beans. I've always found the jingles to be one of the most enjoyable parts of the podcast. Oh, I like this email, Josh.
Hmm.
What a start to an email.
Hmm.
However.
That's better.
That's more like it. Lovely.
There is one jingle that has confused me every episode since it was added. The email jingle. It's only today that I finally realised that it is saying, like a robot shoeing a horse, and not like a robot shoeing a horse.
Mm-hmm.
What?
I'll say it again. It's only today that I realised that it is saying, like a robot shoeing, S-H-O-E. I-N-G, a horse.
Okay.
And not, like a robot shoeing, S-H-O-O-I-N-G, a horse. This has entirely transformed the narrative of the jingle. My initial impression was a robot shooing a horse, double O, as if to say, get out of here. You're not needed anymore. I'll deliver the mail from now on.
Can I say how delightfully naive that he thinks that when the robots do finally get rid of the horses, they'll do it as politely as shooing. Mate, get on some websites, read about AI, read about what's coming up. It is not there. They were not going to be shooing anything out of the way. It's going to be a thousand ball bearings through that horse. It'll be, isn't it? It'll be four hooves. That's it. That's all that'll be left. It'll be four hooves and a smell. And its name in the air, briefly. Excelsior. Yeah, and it'll be gone. And those hooves they will take because it's the hardest part of a horse. They'll take those shoes, those hooves, and use them to make more robots. Yeah, I've thought this through, yeah.
Well,
go on.
It may be that Josh isn't quite as naive as you think. He writes, without the crucial detail of the robot putting horseshoes on the horse, it sounds like the robot is threatening a horse at gunpoint, demanding the horse's hoof, and then riddling the horse with bullets when the horse failed to comply. Much to the owner's distress. So it turns out that Josh very much accords with your view of
He does know about AI. In fact, actually, I'd like to get together with Josh and maybe bounce some ideas around to do with the future of AI, because he sounds like he really knows about AI. And actually, if he's got any ideas, I'm looking for investment opportunities. Both ways, to invest in and also to be invested
in.
In. So, yeah, let's get together, let's talk. Interesting. In fact, I'm actually already starting to think he might actually be an AI.
Hmm.
Okay, well, if you can physically meet, Henry will be at the Nero's.
and if we can't...
Every Wednesday afternoon.
It's a shadow Nero.
it's a ghost Nero. So if you are an AI and you can only be experienced through a download, let me know before I go to the ghost Nero, because they haven't got Wi-Fi anymore. I'll download you onto my... I mean, obviously, you let me know how it works. But if I need to download you onto my system, I'll do that before I leave the house. Anyway, carry on.
This in turn confused me even more about the word being used. And it made me wonder if there was a missing letter T and the word being said was shooting, since that is what seemed to be happening.
Can I say, this Josh guy or AI, whatever he is, or drone, avatar, whatever the hell he is, I take my hat off to the way he's still going with this email. I take my hat off to him. I've absolutely no idea what he's on about. But... he's actually, it's just, there's a persistence to it that I really admire. Slash fear if he's an AI.
Okay, I'm going on. After realising my mistake over a year later, everything has fallen into place. The robot is simply putting horseshoes on a horse, although I'm still uncertain if the cry of, my beautiful horse, at the end is a cry of delight at the newly shod horse or distress at a mangled job.
Well, it's not for us to say these things, is it? It's, you know, you take what you...
The jingle is the jingle. You take from it what you will.
Mm. I'd also say that if he was actually a human, he would just get it.
I see.
You think this is like a kind of Blade Runner test to understand the emotional subtext of a jingle?
I think we're dealing with an AI. He may be a physical AI.
Have we discovered the way to root out AIs in future?
Is this the beginning of the
resistance?
In the shorter term, it's simply a replacement of the how many of these squares contain a horse or whatever it is at the moment. You know what I mean? To check if you're a robot when you're buying stuff. It could be, listen to this jingle and write down any ideas that, that it sparks. That might be the new test.
Well, Josh writes, I don't know if there's anyone else who's made the same mistake as me and not realised it, but if so, hopefully this is enlightening. So maybe he's actually...
He's looking to connect with other AIs. Yeah.
He's talking to the other AIs out there and he's saying, don't get caught out.
Yeah, I wonder if we should even be reading this out at all, because we might be unwittingly broadcasting.
He's trying to create a network, isn't he?
We're part
of the network. Yeah.
We're a pawn.
We don't want that to happen.
I think we've just become a vassal podcast for the robot takeover.
You know what? I think what we should do? Let's make a decision now to definitely not
collaborate.
collaborate.
Let's be the Vichy podcast. Please, guys, if you wouldn't mind.
But what I think we should do is let's make a decision to definitely not put out this email and not put this. So if this is in the podcast, that means that we've already started. The robots are now our masters. And what I would do is, if you're listening to this at home, get all the electronic utensils you have together, flat screen TVs, whisks.
And vow fealty to them.
And you might have to mock up a little ceremony.
Whisk king.
And just try and do whatever you think the whisk would want you to do from now on, which I imagine will be manually whisking stuff on its behalf. So crack some eggs in a bowl, get your hands in.
Use your head as a whisk.
use your head as a whisk. And can I say,
if you've got a thrashing toddler in the house, use those legs. Do you know what I mean? Just
use those legs.
Yeah.
And if you can make a meringue that holds, you may survive until the summer. But it's going to be
it's entirely dependent on the caprice of the whisk.
And they are a capricious utensil. Okay, yeah, carry on.
May I suggest that at the apex of that network, we would find our old friend Spurbs.
Oh, yes. Because we've never ever really truly cracked whether or not Spurbs
we've
is...
never cracked. Well, whose side was he on?
Is mankind, we know he's on or machine,
side.
Have we?
We don't know what... we don't know if he's man or machine. Also, we don't know what side he's on, except that we know he's on his side. But that then brings us back to the fact that we don't know what side he's on. But he is on his side. Which then leads to the question, what side is he on? But yeah, is he... has he been hunkering down, reading up on... boning up on IT?
Well, on the topic of
the
Spurbs...
The idea that we discovered that eventually Spurbs turned out just to be a toaster. That would be really humbling stuff, wouldn't it?
A Wi-Fi-enabled toaster.
With 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 levels, defrost, and... perturb some podcasters setting. And that someone just left it on that back.
Someone's just accidentally... Someone in Newton Abbott is just willy-nilly pressing it.
He was trying to defrost some muffins.
He was trying to pop up a bit of pita bread.
But
he thought it was a pop-up button.
It was a pop-up. And he was worried about the pita bread being so hot on the inside that it would burn his hands. So he was flustered.
On the topic of Spurbs, we've had a rather concerning email. Signed... from the Sons of Spurbs.
Oh, my word.
Now, this is a radical breakaway organisation. Yeah. Absolutely terrifying, aren't they, the Sons of Spurbs? A lot of people say they're worse than Spurbs.
Yeah.
They've taken his ideology, but they've twisted it. But they've not twisted it. Obviously, it was already a twisted ideology. We were hoping, against hope, that they would have twisted it back in the direction it twisted from, therefore straightening the ideology. Unfortunately,
they've twisted it into full fervour, haven't they?
They've twisted it into full fervour.
Full fusilli.
it's an absolutely...
Maybe even conjugally.
It's a fusilli of hate. It's a conjugally of despair, I would argue. Get your colander out, because we've got a...
A paneophobe?
A paneophobe. And the spaghetti... of reason will hopefully be able to spread the a suffocating carbonara of truth over the fusilli. But of course, a lot of that carbonara has actually ended up, unfortunately, just clogging up the clogging up the tubes, the penne tubes. And actually,
the lardons were too fatty.
The The Lardons of Justice?
The Lardons of Justice.
We're too fatty, you fools! Don't put creme fraiche in it, you idiot! The Lardons are fatty enough in themselves!
We could have used the pancetta of tomorrow.
We're out of bay leaves of peace, for the love of God. You said you were going to get some more bay leaves of peace.
I meant the fresh tarragon of hope, not the dried up tarragon of hope. But we... Yeah, so anyway, carry on.
So, we've had an email from the Sons of Spurbs.
Yes, oh, God. Prescribed group.
Ready yourself.
Terrifying people.
Dear bastards.
I can't say that's actually their most polite way of opening an email. We should be grateful we've got the dear bastards.
And they do run a letter-writing course, don't they? A masterclass.
They do.
Because that is a very, very attention-grabbing way of opening a letter.
It does. And it's normally got exclamation marks on it. Has it got that?
It's just a comma, though, so they're sparing
us. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The Sons of Spurbs have spread their tendrils across the globe while you've been on your tax-deductible holiday in your luxurious mega-yachts.
All of that's true, yeah. Mega-yachts eating mega-yogurts, isn't it? It's what we do. Yeah.
Built like a set of nesting dolls, yachtception. More like bastardception.
this is all their classic rhetoric. This is all the techniques they use. Which are, imagine, on an email, it doesn't sound that impressive. In front of a gathering of 2,000 or 3,000 people.
Hooded people, yeah.
A hooded git. This is
hooded gits and hooded whisks.
Yeah. The whisks would be spinning. The whisks will increase their spinning every time they hear bastards. That's that key word. They spin twice as the more they go on to... Top setting, don't they? setting three. Yeah. Blancmange setting. Carry on.
Maybe your next live event will be nothing but a sea of spurbs. Just waiting for you to slip up so we can all give you a live uni-bollocking. This next part I don't understand. Think about that next time you're showing Henry how to pleasure a woman in one of your live demonstrations.
Okay, can I say... Okay, I don't know what he's talking about there, because those have been going really well, though, haven't they? I mean, I've learned a lot about pleasuring a woman. Ben, you enjoy teaching. And actually, Ben, you often say you learn a lot more from me, don't you? And from the woman who... And the audience... simply don't know what he's talking about there.
Love from the Sons of Spurbs. I think they've tried to confuse us. They've tried to sow discord. I'm not going to let it happen.
The trouble is, though... What really frightens me about the Sons of Spurbs is they have the fervour of youth, and the fact is, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're like the
blind certainty, isn't it?
They've got the blind certainty, and they're so zealous. Mm. I mean, they're almost overzealous. They're just heavily zealous, and there's no talking to them. It's a terrifying idea, isn't it, that we do a live show and literally everyone in the audience is Sons of Spurbs.
Or a whisk.
Or a whisk. And as I said when I last went shoplifting in the kitchen section of John Lewis, that's a whisk I'm willing to take.
Oh, my God. The thing is, I'm quite impressed by that. I'm quite impressed. I'm not amused.
No,
it's admirable. Cold. It's very admirable.
I
don't know. I think there was some fairly heavy crowbarring going on.
Off it.
All right. It was pretty good. It was
heavy crowbarring is the new light crowbarring.
Is it?
Yeah, it's all about being aware of the crowbar.
Oh, right.
They try and hide it from the audience. Bring them in on it.
Okay, all right. I didn't realise that.
On the continued Spurbs theme, James emails, Dear Beans, in your end of series podcast, you suggested to a listener to escape the clutches of Spurbs and his influence on Spotify, defaulting to playing the Thatcher speech mashups.
Oh, yeah.
By escaping to the snowy confines of northern Canada, namely Yukon and the Northwest Territories.
Mm.
At that exact moment, I was listening to your podcast while traversing the frozen landscape of the Yukon.
I love it when this kind of thing happens. I love that kind of thing.
At that instant, I knew that Siri was listening to my aural choices and could now triangulate my position. My cover had been blown.
Where it's safe. Nowhere is safe.
I'm therefore writing the short note to inform you that I will now need to go even further undercover. As such, I will travel using the least noticeable mode of transport available. Myself and my possessions will be suspended beneath a series of balloons, practically undetectable by modern technologies.
Okay. Well,
Be a bit careful there, because they have tweaked the radars in the States. I know that did hit the news recently, so you
they did
be a bit
notice
a
big
the
balloon,
old,
didn't they?
The old balloons, yeah.
Can I say we do try to be culturally irrelevant, don't we? So it's a bit unusual for us to be discussing a news related item, bearing in mind that we went through the whole thing on zeppelins and didn't even think about that balloon thing, didn't we?
Was it a Chinese balloon?
The I'm first not one was, it. And then the one that they shot there. Then they tweaked the radars so they're super sensitive, and then they
and
shot
now any balloon
three more. But I think we still don't know exactly what it was that they shot down. I mean, it could have just been at someone's sixth birthday helium panda that they just blasted out of space over Montana. We don't know, with a £4 million missile. I don't
it's
know.
It's been a terrible time, hasn't it, for children's entertainment? They've obviously all been rounded up, haven't they?
Also, I doubt the Chinese spy balloon, they're going to go for panda as their theme.
It's obvious.
No, that's true. That one, yeah. So I don't know that we'll ever necessarily know.
Also, I think the only dog you can make in balloons is sausage dog, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Why does it need to be a dog?
I think because I'm a bit tired. I think my brain was thinking that a panda's a kind of dog.
A panda's a kind of Chinese dog, yeah.
It's actually a kind of bear, so it's not that far off. I forgot. It's a kind of bear, isn't it? Not a kind of dog. And it's bears are a kind of dog, I suppose.
So that's what happens when we cover the news, isn't it, basically? that's why we don't do it.
Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thank you to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If you're interested in no adverts, bonus episodes, do go and sign up on our Patreon. There's lots there to enjoy. And there'll be more hot Zeppelin chat. But I can't promise it'll be about Zeppelins. But it'll be tangentially related to Zeppelins. Probably.
Yes, I think that's as... Yeah, I wouldn't put it any more firmly than that.
And if you sign up at the Sean Bean Lounge level, you get a shout-out in the Sean Bean Lounge.
Sure do.
Where Mike was last night.
Indeed I was.
It's nice going back there, isn't it, after a month away, just to see how things have been getting on down there.
It's been busy.
Yeah.
All sorts going on. And last night was a lot of fun.
It was the annual moth-proofing picnic, wasn't it?
Indeed it was. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
With spring on the horizon and clear skies above, yesterday felt like the perfect opportunity for the Sean Bean Lounge annual moth-proofing picnic in the Sean Bean Filmography Commemorative Garden, which this year has been revamped to botanically consecrate and honour Sean Bean's definitive role as Dave Toombs in the 1998 Steve Guttenberg action classic Airborne. Brian DeChico laid down a brand new anti-moth vinyl-coated picnic blanket with a dead moth skewered on a cocktail stick in the corner as a warning, and the feasting began. Lydia Shears brought a delicious quiche Lorraine seasoned and moth-proofed with cedar nuggets. Warren Piers provided triangular ham sandwiches without crusts but with spring-loaded moth traps. Blue New brought a pork and rabbit pie which was straight out of the oven and straight into a moth-deterring liquid nitrogen supercooler. Corey Sisterhem guarded a bowl of cherry tomatoes with a Lego baseball bat, and Dan Sattel guarded the Baba Ganoush with an infrasonic sound cannon. Colin Barnes took care of business ahead of schedule by registering 4,000 moths to participate in the Pamplona Bull Run without appropriate footwear. Less successfully, John seasoned the Terra Muscolata with beetle powder, Joshua Cormacan got trapped at the bottom of his own adhesive kill jar and crushed by olives, and Tom Yeomans attempted to trick a moth into drinking hemlock but was outmaneuvered. But picnicking will have its wrinkles, and all was far from lost, as Luke Bovard suffused the homemade lemonade with a series of moth-repelling tinctures, including lavender, rosemary, bay leaves, cloves, and methyl chloroisothiazolinone. Adele Banks enmeshed a Cornish yarg in electrified wire, and Anna Schumann had deployed the moth's natural predators and packed the chicken drumsticks in a hamper full of hedgehogs and daddy longlegs. Bon appetit!
Right, that's the podcast. Let's just determine whose version of our theme tune will play us out. We've got loads. We've got loads ready to go. Let me give you a couple of options. Do you want film noir?
I'm going to say now, yes, it's going to be that one. But carry on.
Well, let's go for Phil Noir.
Lovely.
Let's go for Phil Noir.
This is from Morgan. Morgan writes, long-time listener to the podcast, first-time theme tune writer. I love the podcast, but I can't help but feel it would be improved by the slightest format changes. You should keep it mostly the same, but instead of your usual insightful discussions, Mike can be a loose cannon detective trying to solve the murder of the local mayor, played by Sean Bean. Henry, his hapless yet lovable psychic, is searching for clues on the scene. The case goes hopelessly until Bean Detective Agency finds a wallet emblazoned with the insignia of the Cassowaries, a local gang. They go to the address listed on the driving license within. Guns drawn, they cautiously open the doors to find an office chair with its back to the door. The man in the chair slowly turns round to reveal Benjamin.
Oh, it's very good.
You can take me down right now, says Benjamin, but I'm just a lowly henchman. The real villain is Spurbs. The scene fades to black. A gunshot is heard. Yeah. And then you read out the emails.
I think let's...
It's a gripping start.
That feels good. I think let's do that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Starting next week. I love it.
A very Benjamin turns out to be very loose-lipped, easily interrogated.
Yes.
Henchman. But that's okay. Yeah. I think that's credible. And I think okay, let's do it. Fine.
When the gunshot is heard, who's shooting who?
Well, is that's it. Benjamin? That's what we don't... We don't know. We're into the emails. You've got to have cliffhangers, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it kind of then...
Well, maybe we'll reveal that in the sequel to Three Bean Salad whenever they come.
Presumably, it's just out. Henry's sidearm going off by accident, isn't it? It's the most likely scenario.
Yeah, feels credible.
Yeah.
Morgan writes, I hope you enjoy the attached Three Bean Noir theme tune. Well, thank you, Morgan. Please,
thank you.
Lovely. Thanks, Morgan.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Cheerio.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.